PR station.
And you're listening to WMNF. And you're listening to WMNF 88.5, WMNF Tampa.
It's where I wanna be, pick me up and then turn me round. I feel numb, born with a weak heart. Guess I must be having fun. The less we say about it, the better. Make it up as we go along. Feet on the ground, head in the sky. It's okay, I know nothing's wrong, nothing. I got plenty of time. You got light in your eyes, and you're standing here beside me. I love the passing of time.
Thank you all so much for tuning in today to WMNF and Art in Your Ear. My name is Joellen Schilke. I am truly, truly, truly the hostess who loves you absolutely the mostest. I will go to the mat for that. This show, Art in Your Ear, is lately I've been playing a lot of music, but we have an interview today. I'm very excited to do that, always. We're going to be talking to Job Site Theater. David Jenkins and Andresia Mosley are presenting Twilight, Los Angeles, 1992. Could not be a timelier play to have go on. So we're going to be chatting about that and also chatting about theater in the time of coronavirus when there are, well, there's not lockdowns, but we're, you know, where a lot of people are dying and the government isn't doing anything. That's the place that we're in. So let's play some more music before the interview. I've got a ton of stuff for you. This is funny. Frank Knox is here, so I wanted to play Knox Fortune before he left. This is called Sincerity on Art in Your Ear on WMNF 88.5.
Be the one that I admire, be the one that lets us pass all the things.
think I lost my mind. You will probably find me in LA. I'll just lay here wasting time. Hope to live and die in LA. Take a little trip and come and visit your boy. If you got all these issues, why you living there for? Search and destroy. I'ma take these bodies to the floor. The show. Beat me up, Scotty, feeling low. Oh no, girl, I think I lost my mind. You will probably find it in LA. LA. I'll just lay here wasting time. Hope to live and die in LA. LA. Just the other day, I made it to Malibu. We was getting high, smoking weed by the pool. We gotta have the party better. Who gon' ask for help? Girl, I think I lost my mind. You will probably find it in LA. LA. I'll just lay here wasting time. Hope to live and die in LA. LA. Girl, I think I lost my mind. You will probably find it in LA. LA. I'll just lay here wasting time. Hope to live and die in LA. LA.
And that's Seb with Live and Die in L.A. And let's see if I'm doing this phone system right. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, good. Yay, ding, ding. I am so thrilled to welcome to the airwaves. Thank you so much, Andresia Mosley, for calling in. And thank you, welcome back, David Jenkins, for calling in. Thank you.
Hi.
Our friends are here because there is a unbelievably timely play opening up at Jobsite Theater. It's going to be playing this weekend. It played already, and then December 1st and 2nd. Is that
That's
correct?
Right.
Okay. So, Twilight, Los Angeles, 1992, by the impeccable Anna Deavere Smith. What were the choices for bringing this, putting this play on?
It was part of a commitment, you know, early on when we looked at what we might be able to do as we began making a turn toward theater happening back indoors. We were looking at one-person shows. This is one that I've loved for quite a while. And working with Andresia on Doubt, I started thinking about it with her anyway, and so when it did look like we were going to be, there was another call coming in. When it looked like we were going to be able to start pursuing indoor performances, I handed off the script to Andresia to see if it would be something she'd be interested in.
And Andresia, it's an incredible script. Now, I assume you were kind enough to send me the script to read, and you guys had to have pared it down a little bit, I would imagine, from the original. It seems like it'd be like a 9-hour performance. How is it to go from person to person to person to person to person to person?
It is work. it really is a battle with your emotions and feelings, and keeping everyone's feelings and emotions at bay until that person comes up. So it's a lot of thinking while acting, to keep everybody's story straight and kind of go from each person's journey. But a lot of it began for me as a physical thing, where each one of them carries their bodies differently, and that kind of puts me where they are. They sound different. They carry themselves differently. And that's how, at least I initially started the endeavor.
Were there certain characters? I mean, how many different characters are you playing in this performance?
Originally, the script is about 43 characters, and you're right, it'd be about a 9 to 10 hour play. we did pare it down, David and I, to 27, so mm-hmm. I played 27 of them.
Wow. And was there, were there characters, or who were the characters that were sort of the entryway in, that sort of got your toes in the door for you on understanding how you were going to do the show?
I think it started with some of the lighter characters first. Elaine, the real estate agent.
Oh, I love her.
yeah, she's just a ball of comedy, and she's genuine and just totally flawed and unaware of it. So she was one that was, you know, much easier for me to step in because her story is a little lighter. She leaned more towards the comedy portion of things. And then I would say another one would have to be, and I'm going through all of them. I would have to say another one would be Keith, kind of that homeboy, loud, all over the place. Those would be the two, I think, that came more readily. They came very easily, and then we kind of worked into the ones that have more level.
Now, I want to sort of step back and talk a little bit about what this play is. Twilight Los Angeles 1992 emerged from the aftermath of the Rodney King beating and the trial and all of that. So both of you, David and Gisia, if you would maybe talk a little bit about what this play is, what the structure of the play is, and then also how Jobsite is presenting it.
Well, the play itself, I like the descriptor of that's been applied to not only this play, but a lot of Anna DeVere Smith's work as a living newspaper. She, with all of her work, she does what she considers to be social justice drama. And so when there is an event, a phenomena, something that she's looking at, she really gets into the community and does an extensive amount of interviews. So for Twilight, what she did was she was commissioned by the Market Taper Forum in Los Angeles to go out and to interview everyone on their various perspectives and experiences with that year and a half in L.A. And so she talked to everyone, law enforcement, the lawyers, the police, members of the Rodney King family, members of other families that were victims of things that were happening. And so she collected over like 300 hours of interviews with about 200 different people. So again, your estimation that the show would be about 9 hours long if performed in total is not far from the truth. I do think it would be at least a 3-hour show if you were to do every single piece. And so what then she does is allows the words of the people to speak for themselves without really, you know, editorializing or adding. So people are seeing real transcriptions of real interviews that happen with real people where they talk about, you know, their real experiences with things. And so she works really hard at not, with any of these shows that she creates, of not necessarily pointing a finger, but gathering all of the different perspectives within the audience to process and think about and consider on their way out the door. Because, you know, with a lot of the issues that she deals with in her dramas, be it, you know, police violence, inequality in any way, the school-to-prison pipeline, you know, these are nuanced, difficult, multi-layered, multifaceted issues. And so I'm a big fan of that, and it does stand to the kind of work that we do here at Jobsite. And in terms of how we kind of came to the way we're approaching it, two things. One, there is a 90-minute cutting of this play that Anna DeVere Smith does. There was a PBS broadcast of it. We were influenced a lot by that, but yet there were pieces within the show that were not included in that version that we liked, and there were pieces within the 90-minute cutting that we didn't do. And the fun thing about this was also that we put together three different performances this fall in the JABE on a single set. So there was Giles Davies' performance of Frankenstein, Modern Prometheus. There's the Strassner production of Always Patsy Cline. And there's our production of Twilight, Los Angeles, 1992, all happening on the same set. And as you noted, you know, we've got different nights, different shows, and we're running these three performances in rep with one another, which we've never done before. And it presents, you know, its own set of opportunities and challenges.
That's what I was going to ask you about, is directing and performing, acting and directing in the time of COVID. There was, and I do want to mention at the end that you have a live stream that people can do, but there was so much up until just a couple months ago, all the focus was on how do we produce digital theater.
Right.
And now sort of returning to the stage, but understanding not just physically the context of the stuff that we're living in, but emotionally the context of what we're living in. How did that, or if it did, affect both the directing and the acting in this show?
Andrea, you want to lead on that?
Yeah, I'll say this as far as the acting portion goes. Initially, it cut a little too close to home. I really, on the onset of us going into rehearsals, was emotionally having a little bit of a difficult time because we're grappling with so much right now. And the play, I always tell people, you know, plays can be a lot of pretend. It's very rarely that you do a work that basically speaks to the day you're actually in. And Twilight, with the protests, with police violence, with racial inequality, just that whole uprising that we've had, you know, it was really my for real genuine feelings getting intertwined with the characters that I was playing. So it helped also, but it was really a heavy weight initially, really... being able to kind of press through my for real feeling in the middle of doing everything. And as far as safety goes, it really was also a challenge acting-wise, just not to get the courage to act, but the courage to return to a live audience. So I think that the way that the stress and job setting, David and I had many conversations because I had quite a few fears going into it, rightly so. But I think that the way the job side and the stress really took into account not just the audience feelings of perception, but my own with returning was really great.
I have to say, I was so sorry. I was supposed to go Wednesday night, and then something came up at home and dashed all the plans. But I was trepidatious, but so excited to be able to go see theater. The amount... that of missing theater and live performance was has been shocking to me. I didn't realize that it was so sustaining and nourishing. But I cannot even imagine what it would be to be a theater person these days and have so many unknowns swirling around you. It seems a lot.
it is a lot.
David, as the, you know, as the head of a theater company, as a performer, as an artist, but also as someone who, you know, I mean, you're immersed in theater professionally, you have a doctorate in theater. What are the things swirling through your head about doing this show and just about in general doing Frankenstein? What's going on mentally about theater in the age of COVID for you?
I mean, we're really excited to be able to be back. You know, we started dipping our toes into things in October with doing some outdoor performances at the Strass Center. I've been working very closely with the Strass Center for this reopening plan and doing everything in our power to make sure that this experience, these experiences, that safety and health and all of these things are first and foremost. And that crosses over into a lot of new things. I feel like, you know, we're a kinder, gentler industry in many ways because, and I'm hoping a lot of this stuff will be sticks. You know, we need to, things are just different, you know, all the way around. And so at every level, the way that we're being open and transparent and not only, you know, working with our artists because, you know, there's a lot of trust involved in a regular process, and for artists to come in and work with people, period, requires a great deal of trust and requires very special relationships. And with things going on now, it's 10 times more important to make sure that artists know that we care and that, you know, their health and safety and the health and safety of the audience is the most important thing to us. And when you look at a show like this, you know, as Andrea said, I'm very aware of the lived embodiment of work like this that is added on to stress and the concerns and the uncertainty with the weather. I mean, not the weather. I didn't mean the weather at all. With the climate of the virus right now, our political climate. Clearly, the show touches on issues that we haven't dealt with. You know, there's a reason why we're doing this show right now, with how it speaks to a continuation of the themes and the things that this show brings to light. You know, we haven't dealt with it. We haven't fixed it. And I hope audiences are able to see that and acknowledge that, again, without it necessarily being something that points the finger in a very particular direction, because honestly, there's enough blame to go around with things like this. And so I'm hopeful. I'm very encouraged about a return to live theater because, frankly, the video stuff is not viable for any arts organization. It's just not. It's something to do, but we're not filmmakers. We're not film producers. We're not film actors. The technology is also expensive, and frankly, there's just not an appetite for it. People have way too many other digital options at their disposal to really be that interested in paying for video, you know. So we have to concentrate on what we do, and what we do is bring people together. And yes, we do live in a time where that's not the same. So we've got people, you know, 11 feet away from each other in the theater and at least 8 feet away from the actors on stage. And there are all of these protocols. And yes, people have to wear a mask through the show. And, you know, but this is the only way we are going to be able to do and experience theater for, you know, possibly the next year and a half. And these are just facts. So what do we do? Do we let the industry dry up? Do we let all of these people go unemployed, continue to go unemployed? No. And so we have to find the path and find the middle path and find the right way to do the right thing. And so that's what's been on my mind. Mm-hmm. Are all of the ways of doing the right thing the right way.
Just a few things. And especially with the, you know, being very aware of the cultural moment that we're in. I was doing some work for school and ran across from 1827, the first black-owned free newspaper published for a year. And of course, I just blanked out on the name of it. But I was reading articles written in that, and there's, except for sort of a styling of language, it was the exact same thing that I read earlier that day in the Washington Post. You know, I was kind of like, right. Oh my God, come on, people. Let's go back and talk a little bit about the play and a little bit about the performance. There's all these different characters, and they're reacting to the trial, they're reacting to the beating, they're reacting to this stuff. And Andresia, before you talked about sort of it was the entry level of the humor of a couple of characters. Are there a few characters where it was something that you needed to ramp up to before you could let them into you or give them your all?
I would say one in particular that sticks out in my mind is Angela, and she is the aunt of Rodney King, and she talks about in her monologue in the play. She talks about the moment she found out that it was going on, which was from another relative, and then she talks about actually seeing him after the beating. And what it did to her emotionally, and you know, it's a lot of space to let that story be told by a family member through me. So she was someone that I had to allow the sadness and the impact, because she's so early on. She's like the fourth character, I believe, that I do. So we laugh a little bit, and then the next thing I know, it's Angela. So she was a lot of space to let in, and it's actually one of the transitions in the shows that takes me a little bit longer to come out of, because there's so much that she says and experiences. I think one of the characters that, or the set of characters that surprised me of how deeply emotionally I felt them, are the Korean characters that talk about their experience with the looting and their loved ones with what was going on and their perception of America as a result. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this group that in our current debate are not included, but they live here. And so I had never really thought about their experience in particular, or the similarities of their experience with the Black experience in America. And so having to tell their stories from their side was really emotionally impactful for me as well.
I thought one of the, another one, and just the two people that you mentioned, so powerful. And then I was surprised by how moved I was by the juror from the trial. I really hadn't expected to be sort of like, oh, she's sympathetic, you know, and all different things. I will say, dear listeners, that the show has the writing in it, which is, I guess it's not as much writing as it is writing, but it's editing, because Anna Deavere Smith takes people's words verbatim and edits it. I'm not sure if she rearranges the order or not, but lets people speak for themselves. And her brilliance is in asking the right questions and being a good listener and being an amazing editor and understanding how to create a narrative. Is there sort of a wave type movement through the play for you, or a crescendo? And then how, like, overall as an evening of theater, as the performer and the director, what were you trying to get? So with the whole flow over that 90 minutes?
From my perspective, like, there was a great, the LA Times, when they reviewed the original production, referred to it as a cacophony of voices. And I really grabbed onto that idea. The first act, I've worked really hard with Andreezia to achieve that level of the cacophony of voices. The music is very loud. The music comes in sharp bursts. The lighting is very abrupt, like lights up, lights down. The pace is pretty quick with the way that the first act is structured. And you're sort of kind of getting hit by, like, you know, bam, perspective. Here's this perspective, here's that perspective, bam, 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 bam. Until we kind of hit the end of the second act, where it does begin to sink and slow down a little bit. And then what that allows us to do is really settle down in the second act with some of the longer speeches from folks that then, you know, it's kind of like those body blows come in and hopefully soften the audience up a little bit, to kind of use a boxing metaphor, that there are all these, like, really quick jabs and all these really quick body blows kind of soften folks up for then hopefully for them to be in a place where they're more receptive to what's coming as the show goes on. And, you know, the show does this, and I obviously wanted to highlight this as well, that the show ends, you know, with the character talking about limbo and talking about things not being black and white. And I felt like that's really important. For the worst thing I could do as a director is to load the table, so to speak, or, you know, to weigh things so unequally in one direction where folks just walk out convinced of one idea. And Andreezia's totally hit something that I agree with, too, with the inclusion of the Korean characters in the show. as well as the Latin perspectives in the show. And it's interesting because Anna DeVere Smith even talked about when she put the show together, she hired a team of dramaturgs to come on, theater researchers, if you don't know what a dramaturg is, but theater researchers of various identities so that they could come in and keep her honest in the storytelling, because she said up front that if she knew that to approach this story, if it were just her, it would have been a pretty black and white take on things. But there are all of these other voices that comprised LA at the time, and that clearly comprise our world now. So I'm hoping, you know, I really wanted folks to walk away thinking, you know, walk away considering, and that, you know, takes an aggressive bit of work there at the beginning, which, you know, I can think all this stuff all day long, but Andreese is the one that actually has to do it, you know. And Andreese is the one is out there doing it like a boss. And so it's a wonderful thing to feel, you know, to kind of have that vision, and especially after being so far away from all this for so long, to then come back and have this experience. It's so satisfying.
Well, I want to remind listeners that we're speaking with, that was David Jenkins, and with us also is Andreese Mosley. And they are, David directing and Andrea doing Yeoman's task of doing all of the different characters in Twilight Los Angeles 1992 at Job Site Theater. And so it's going to be up not this coming weekend, but the first and the second, is that a Wednesday and Thursday?
Tuesday, Wednesday.
I'm very challenged these days on dates. I was like, Thanksgiving is next week. What? Will you just walk through a little bit, because I know I've got a couple of emails about this and people are concerned. What exactly is the process for attending the show? Obviously, we can't do ticket amounts, but
yeah.
How does it work for someone? You had mentioned before that people are, you know, at a table isolated from other people and stuff like that. But actually, the part before that, getting the tickets and getting to the Straz.
Yep. I'll try to make this as quick as possible. But the Straz Center has gone paperless, so there is an app that folks will get, whether they purchase the tickets online or purchase over the phone. They'll be directed to this app. The program's in the app. The health screen is in the app. The tickets are in the app. And that's just one of the ways that we're trying to avoid contact and keep things clean. Everything is cordoned off in a one-way, kind of like the grocery store, where there's one door that leads into the theater. There's a one-way cordoned off path that leads folks to their seats. And then that one-way flow also goes back out the other set of doors and then outside. So we're trying to keep physical distance at all times from all other parties. We're no longer selling tickets individually by, like, you know, like a ticket. So the seating arrangements are, there are single seats up in the balcony. There are pairs of seats that are separated in the mezzanine. And then there are the four top tables that are on the orchestra floor level. And so people purchase the group. So one ticket, two tickets, four tickets. And if somebody wants to come by themselves and sit at a four top table, the whole table is theirs. Like, no one will go near them. It's one price, whether they come by themselves or come with four people. Same thing with the pairs, and obviously singles are singles. Every other piece of furniture has been removed out of that room so that there's no chance of somebody, you know, moving around or moving a seat or doing anything like that. All tables are 11 feet away from each other, so even if people move their chairs, they're 6 feet away from each other still. The performer's at least 8 feet away from the closest audience member. Masks are mandatory inside the theater at all times, even with the distance. I know some people don't like that, but it is for their safety as well as the staff safety as well as the artist safety. So indoor with distance and masks. The Straz Center's done a great job of putting hand sanitizer everywhere, including on all of the tables, next to every door. There is a mandatory health screen that people have to take before they are permitted entry into the theater. There's a temperature check before people enter the theater. That goes for everybody who works there and everything else. And the Straz has been on the vanguard nationally of Performing Arts Center reopenings, and we've been working very close with them. We've been looking at industry practice. The Straz Center has a 54-page health and safety playbook that they're operating by that was developed with several medical professionals, and so we all are aware that that health and safety absolutely have to come first. And we also understand that maybe not everybody's going to be okay with that because it's too many rules. I'm going to try to not editorialize on how I feel about that. But we can guess. I've gotten a couple of angry emails from people that are like, the governor says you don't have to wear a mask inside, and I've had to remind them that businesses still get to create their own rules and can, you know, do as they like. And I don't think those people that feel that strongly are necessarily theater people anyway.
Right. Well, I also want to mention is that there's people who are like me who are very anxious about returning to that, where I want to do it. But I am around people I'm around people who are vulnerable. I am almost daily around people who cannot, who physically may not be able to withstand getting sick. And so
I fully appreciate that. And
so hearing about all of the different things are done makes me, as a theater goer and also as a slightly paranoid person about COVID, it makes me more comfortable. And if people don't like it, I don't really care.
Everyone who has come to attend the show, you know, like, we've got some folks that probably would go toe-to-toe with you on their claim of being more paranoid than you are.
Probably. I'm not the most paranoid.
But you know, folks are consistently saying this is the safest they've felt anywhere, under any circumstances, since kind of getting back out into public.
Oh, good.
You know, I can't imagine another set of protocols. Like, anytime anyone even brings anything up, we just do it, you know, because it's the right thing to do.
Wonderful. Well, we're almost, go ahead.
I want to say this too really quick about the protocol. As the artist, it is beautiful to look out and see that people would go as far as to adhere to everything so that you can do your work. So it does speak to me as well, and I look out.
And I think right now this work is so important because you're in the middle of a pandemic addressing civil rights issues that have to be addressed, that can't go on any longer. We just cannot let this continue without facing it. And so your work is helping to wedge open the American need to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so doing it within the middle of a pandemic, to me, makes it even more necessary, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Like, we have to do this. This is so vital. We can't ignore both because they're not separate issues. They're entwined with each other. Sorry, mm-hmm. I just had to get that off my chest.
That's okay.
Just before we go, because we're almost out of time, what's next for both of you? What's going on? What's coming up artistically for Job Site, for David Jenkins, for Andresia mostly?
You want to hit that first, Andresia?
Yeah, I can do mine quick. What's coming up? More plays. Look at there. And I do believe, David, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that our play, Doubt, which we had in such wonderful condition that got closed on opening night due to the pandemic, it was really ironic. Like, the day that the world shut down was our opening. And that cast actually includes David and myself, Caitlin and Roxanne. And I believe we're returning in January.
We are
returning in January. So for me, we're going to go from Twilight to Doubt, and then I will be working with some of the other theaters. I don't want to announce their schedule before they do. But just more work. Yeah.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that. And then also, Andresia, do you have a website or a place where people can find your poetry and spoken word?
Yeah. You know what? It's Real, R-E-A-L-V-T-H-E, artist. You can find that on Facebook. And my website and all those things are listed there. I strongly say just go to the Facebook open page. You can find a bunch of stuff.
Okay.
So Real the Artist. Just look it up on Facebook.
All right, we'll find you there. And David, Doubt is coming up. And what's this Frankenstein thing?
Right. We've got we've got a filmed version of Frankenstein available up right now for folks that might have missed that over Halloween week, starring the incomparable Giles Davis. That is up only through December 3rd. We are, you know, we will be in the Jade Theater now from January. Actually, I could just say from now through next July, mm-hmm. all shows that were possibly going to be in the Schomburg Playhouse have now been moved to the Jade for safety and health reasons.
Because it's like 17 stories high. Let's just
right.
That.
I mean, the Jade is huge, and so we're basically getting as many people as the Jade normally would seat 320 people, and we've only got 100 spots in there now. So we're down to 30% of what the capacity in the room is. But that 100 people is about what we used to be able to get next door in the tiny little Schomburg. So we're excited to have all of those shows and to be resident in there for the next 8 months. Very excited about that. We are hoping to continue to be able to release things digitally. We keep experimenting with it, but, you know, it's costly to do, and frankly, we just need people to pay for the streams if we're going to be able to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole other set of costs and a whole other set of headaches to film a production and edit it and get it up online and
right.
pay for those rights and all that stuff. So we certainly understand folks who are not yet ready to come back to the theater. You're not going to get any argument out of me on that. And if you miss your fix, please, 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 consider doing those downloads of the streaming options. But, I'll be in Doubt with Andrea in January, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, great. Thank you both so much. My guests have been David Jenkins, who you just heard talking, and Andrea Mosley. They will be on December 1st and 2nd doing Twilight Los Angeles 1992, and then you can see them in Doubt starting in January. Thank you guys so much for calling in and chatting about this, and I break a leg. Well, actually, I should not say that, because sometimes people really do it. But I hope everything goes well. I'll say mared. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
So bye-bye now.
Bye.
I was born underwater with $3 and 6 dimes. Yeah, you may laugh, 'cause you did not do your math. Like 1, 2, 3. Damn, y'all feel it? Like 1, 2, 3. The earth keeps turning.
Badu in the background. Why not? Here, let's listen to this announcement from our wonderful radio station.
The Nathan B. Stubblefield Foundation is seeking applications from people with financial experience to join the WMNF Board of Directors. A background in budgeting and auditing finances is preferred. Contact Ms. Julie by phone at 813-238-8001 or via email at missjulie@wmnf.org to request an application. The deadline to apply is November 27th.
And I want to let you know some stuff going on around town. In addition, let's put some music on in the background. One thing, right after this show is the NPR News, and right after the NPR News is a live music showcase where they read broadcasts, and today they're going to have Gun Will Travel on. So you can stay tuned here to 88.5 WMNF to that. Starts at 2.06 p.m. After that is the Rhythm Revival at The Rhythm Revival is a show that sort of explores the deep roots of rock and roll. So you get some early rock and roll, some jumping around like a maniac, jump jive, gospel, all sorts of things. It's a really fun show. That's followed by The Bumpy Ride, which is also roots rock and rockabilly and good music. And of course, that following after that is The Best Hour in Radio, Route 66, Jump Jive and Swing with Mike Vinyl. Soul parties after that, and some Florida blues and R&B right after that. Speaking of Mike Vinyl, he was kind enough to send me this CD, so I thought I would play it for you. This is, what's his name? Joe Mooney, who was a singer, kind of just post-World War II, World War II era. So here's Joe Mooney.
You need to jiggle like a hole in a head. A gigolo wish he were dead. He's got to look fine of several fair, even if feeling nowhere. Just a gigolo everywhere I go. People know the part I'm playing. Paid for every dance, selling each romance, every night a heart betraying. There will come a day when you will fade away. Then what will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo. As life goes on, you need a gigolo like a hole in a head. A gigolo wishes he were dead. He's got to look part of several fair, even if he's feeling nowhere. A different chick makes him sick, but he can't kick because they're putting down dough.
Well, with Joe Mooney in the background, since we're running out of time, let me get some work done here. Did you know that donating your car, boat, or motorcycle to WMNF helps keep the station running? It's an important revenue source for us. Donating is easy. Simply call 1-888-966-3885 or visit WMNFcar.org to schedule your free pickup. Also, I thank you very much to Rob Fitzpatrick, our digital wizard here at WMNF, and he let me know that you can tell Siri or Alexa or whoever you have following your orders on Apple to play Art in Your Ear. Our podcast and Art in Your Ear podcast is now up in Apple Podcasts if you would like to follow us and listen to us that way. It would be fantastic. I'd be so excited. Thank you. Also, I want to let you know, speaking of theater, one of the ways theater is happening in the area is drive-in theater. Freefall Theater has drive-in performances going on there. And let's see, they've got War of the Worlds, and that is going on till December 6th. And then coming after that, they've got A Christmas Carol in Concert. And those are both drive-in theater experiences. And you can go to Free Fall Theater, with theater spelled TRE.com, to get more information about that. Oh my goodness. Well, that was a fast hour. Thank you for sticking with us. Thank you so much. I hope you will like and follow, or follow and then like and then follow, however it goes, our Art in Your Ear page on Facebook. I think it's AIYE on Facebook. And all the stuff that I told you, plus more, will be up there. And next week, we'll be back with just our usual Thanksgiving music show. If there is a reason to be grateful, I am deeply grateful to all of you who listen and support, even who listen, and also to those who listen and support Art in Your Ear and WMNF. Thank you for being such an open-hearted, smart group of people, kind and considerate. Feel very lucky to have you around in our lives. That's it. I guess I got nothing else to say. Take care. I heart you. You are listening in WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM, WMNF.org. Find us on your smartphone with our app, or however else you do this. Bye-bye now. Faces, killing without traces.